gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 Results Investor Conference Call of Dabur India Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Gagan Ahluwalia. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the management of Dabur India Limited, I welcome you to this conference call pertaining to results for the quarter ended 30th September 2021. Present here with me are Mr. Mohit Malhotra, Chief Executive Officer at Dabur India Limited, Mr. Ankush Jain, CFO, Mr. Adarsh Sharma, EVP Sales, and Mr. Ashok Jain, EVP Finance and Company Secretary. We will start with an overview of the company's performance by Mr. Mohit Malhotra, followed by a Q&A session. I now request Mohit to start the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Gagan ma'am. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. At the outset, I would like to convey my best wishes to you and your families for Diwali and the festive season. COVID situation has eased as vaccination is being ramped up across the country. With mobility increasing, there is an improvement in out-of-home consumption, and some of the channels like modern trade and enterprise, which were more impacted, are seeing a revival. The quarter also saw a strong recovery in our food and beverage business and HPC business. The consolidated revenue from operations increased to rupees 2,818 crore during quarter two, growing by 12% over previous year in spite of a high base of 13.7%. India FMCG business registered a growth of 11.9% backed by volume growth of 10%. This reflects a two-year CAGR of 15% in the India business and 13% in the consolidated revenues. Consolidated operating profit increased by 9% despite unprecedented inflation across categories. Profit before tax saw a growth of 12%. Our profit after tax crossed rupees 500 crore mark for the first time, reaching rupees 504 crore during the quarter. The increase in PAT was around 5% on account of the step jump in tax rate in India business. HPC portfolio performed well with 16.7% growth driven by a good momentum across all sub-segments of HPC. Hair oils reported a growth of 27.9% with a strong double-digit growth across all sub-segments. Our market share in hair oils improved by 80 basis points. Both perfumes and coconut oil performed very well, driven by marketing investments and distribution expansion. Shampoos performed very well and recorded a growth of 20%. Our market share in shampoos increased by 30 basis points during the quarter. Salience of bottles in our portfolio is increasing and touched 23% during the quarter, indicating the traction of shampoos in urban markets for the products. The newly launched Vatika Ayurvedic Shampoo and Neem Shampoo showed good consumer acceptance and performed well. Oral care portfolio continued to post industry-leading growth of 13.3%. Red Toothpaste, our flagship brand, posted a double-digit growth, riding on its strong Ayurvedic heritage and consumer pull. Our market share increased by 40 basis points in the toothpaste category. Home care reported a strong growth of 25%, driven by double-digit growth across segments. Odonil reported an increase in market share of 210 basis points, and Odomos increased its market share by 120 basis points. Skincare portfolio witnessed a robust growth of 27% with a good traction in all the three brands, Fem, Oxy, and Gulabari. We have entered the face wash category with the launch of Vatika face washes and have also introduced Amla Aloe Vera Nourishing Gel. Healthcare portfolio reported a marginal decline on a very high base. Our healthcare business has grown by 50% over last year, driven by COVID contextual and immunity-building products. Health supplements, including Chyawanprash and honey, showed some moderation, although the two-year CAGR on these brands was more than 20%, and the brands continued to be salient in consumers' minds. This was reflected in the strong uptake in the market share, which in Chyawanprash category went up by 520 basis points and honey by 430 basis points. We continue to be undisputed market leader in the honey market with strong presence in all channels, e-commerce, modern trade and general trade. The digestive portfolio registered a good recovery with 23% growth on back of improvement in mobility and out-of-home consumption. While COVID contextual OTC products saw some moderation, the power brands such as Honitus, Lal Tail, Pudin Hara saw strong growth. Ethical portfolio continued to perform well with growth of 12.6% despite a high base. Food and beverage business was a star performer in this quarter with a growth of 43%. The business saw strong
So this is the operator.
Of around 16%. It is well poised to cross 100 crore for the year. Among channels, modern trade showed a strong recovery, growing by 26%. Enterprise business also saw a good turnaround, 44% growth. E-commerce business reported a double-digit growth and contributed to around 7% of sales. Rural growth was ahead of the urban growth by around 100 BPS. International business recorded strong constant currency growth of 13.8% with strong growth in almost all geographies. MENA, our largest market, reported a growth of 12.8%. Egypt grew by 17%. Sub-Saharan Africa grew by 25.4%. And Namaste business grew at 16.7%. Turkey business was impacted by currency depreciation. SAARC business performed well with a growth of 17.6%. Overall, our portfolio continues to be on a good trajectory with increase in market shares in almost 95% of all the categories. Our focus continues on brand building, building power brands, expanding distribution, driving innovation, enhancing efficiency, and building organizational capability for being future ready. Inflation remains a big concern going forward. However, our intent is to mitigate this impact through calibrated price increases and saving initiatives. With that, I bring my address to a close and open the Q&A and invite your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead. Abneesh, your line is unmuted. I request you to please unmute your line and proceed.
Yeah, thanks. So congrats on a very good set of numbers. So I've got four questions. First question is on shampoo. You have seen one of your fastest growth on 2-year basis in shampoo. So want to understand here in terms of Ayurvedic, what is the salience? Can a repeat of toothpaste happen in this category? You have launched Neem Ayurvedic. Is there a pipeline filling which is helping 19% CAGR on 2-year basis? So and 30 bps gain in market share also. So if you could take through in terms of naturals and Ayurvedic, because in shampoo anyway, a lot of the competitor products also have some level of naturals, unlike say toothpaste. So if you could clarify on that.
Right. So I'll take your question of these. I think balance three questions maybe once I answer your first question. I think shampoo market, absolutely right observation. I think in our view, shampoo will have a very similar trajectory the way toothpaste market has had. The salience of herbal market in shampoo is not even 10% as we speak, and our market share out of that is roughly around, overall market, we around 6.7%. We've been steadily gaining our market share. So this time also around we've gained 30 BPS and we reached our highest market share around 6.7% in shampoo, and all the variants have done well. We are deliberately and consciously trying to improve our bottle saliency, which is accretive in terms of gross margin to us. While 80% is sachet business, but 23% is also water saliency that we have registered, which is a very good growth. And the salience increase is happening in modern trade and also in e-commerce for us. While in GT, still our sachet is the one which is ruling the roost. But in long term, we expect shampoo to tread the path of oral care, wherein the herbal segment is almost 32% of the total market segment, and in shampoo there's a huge headroom from 10% to 30%, and there are not very many larger players present in the herbal. We launched a neem shampoo and we also Ayurvedic shampoo. Ayurvedic shampoo that we rolled out is getting a very good traction in the marketplace, and we'll be launching multiple alpha ingredient shampoo and multiple benefit shampoos also in this range. So yeah, this is one of the good drivers of our business.
Sure. My second question is on Odomos liquid vaporizer. So the earlier leadership of Dabur had shown reluctance in entering this part of HI. So if you could take us, what is different here given 4 to 5 players are already there here, plus Fitzall machine also is already well established by many players. So will this be largely like ghee and cold pressed oils in terms of being present largely on online, or do you see medium long term being very aggressive even in Kirana?
Yeah, so Mish, we've got a very strong brand for Odomos. Odomos market share in the personal application cream market is almost 62%, and year on year we've been increasing our market share. As we speak, Odomos has increased market share by around 210 basis points in this current quarter also. The brand is very salient. Unfortunately, the brand was only operating in the 300 crore category and the 62% market share, and for good or bad reason, earlier the team thought this is the way to go. But in my view, we have to fish in a pond where there are fishes. And therefore, now we started operating a 300 crore franchise with a brand like Odomos. And we will be operating in all subsegments of HI with the Odomos brand. We made multiple attempts earlier also to launch innovative products on Odomos, not very successful. So as you know, we'll be getting into sprays, we've gone into LVP, and we've gone into nets already. And this will be across the board launch. It will not be a launch which will be restricted to e-commerce, because e-commerce is very small salience of the LVP market. In terms of our right to win and key differentiator also, here we are less invasive and less chemical, and there'll be a natural additive which will add in the LVP, in the active.
And pricing-wise, any difference?
Pricing-wise, we will be pretty competitive in the marketplace to start with. And at a competitive pricing also, our gross margins are good here, in the range of around 50%.
Sure. My next question is on beverage. So 17.5% CAGR on 2-year basis. So how much is new products and PET, etc., and how much is the volume growth, largely volume growth here?
Yeah, so the NPD contribution is almost around 10% for us, almost 9.5 to 10%. And this year we've launched multiple NPDs last year, and all those NPDs are firing on all cylinders for us. Just to give you a couple of points, our PET bottles that we rolled out on the mango drink, where we compete with Maaza and Fruity, that's doing exceedingly well. This year on the drinks market, we should have 100 crore turnover coming only from drinks. Our Apple Mini is doing exceedingly well at 10 rupee price point. Our 10 rupee price point even in drinks in Tetra Pak is doing exceedingly well. We've launched aerated fruit drinks also. Early days yet, we are a small player, so that's also doing exceedingly well. Our volume, we've not taken any price increases much in the beverage segment because there's not much of inflation here. And most of the growth of 43-45% that you see is all on back of volumes. And that's what.
Last question. So Chyawanprash, honey, I wanted to understand where are you getting such a big gain in market share? So 520 bips in Chyawanprash, 430 bips in honey. And second is this double-digit YOY dip. So how do you retain the new customers? So Chyawanprash, for example, penetration increased in the COVID. How will you ensure that a lot of these new customers continue to remain?
Yeah, that's a tough question that you asked me. Obviously, during COVID, what happened, there was such a strong tailwind And on back of tailwind, what happened, the penetration levels of Chyawanprash, which happens to be so low in the country, actually doubled the penetration. So Chyawanprash penetration in the range of around 4% actually became in the range of around 8%. So while we see this is the initial headwind in terms of penetration in Chyawanprash, and the last one quarter, the penetrations have gone a bit down because there's a little fatigue in terms of healthcare product usage with the consumer. But overall, from 4%, the penetrations have actually gone up to a level of around 7% still if I see a 12-year max. So there is a penetration increase which is happening, but Chyawanprash is a small category. And to expand the category, we are doing all what it takes to expand the category to rope in more consumers into it. So therefore, the launch of tablets in Chyawanprash, different format, therefore launch of powder format is sugar-free. On back of all this, we are only expanding the addressable market of Chyawanprash and trying to encroach a little bit MFT consumers into Chyawanprash. So Chyawanprash is a very sticky product. If consumers use Chyawanprash, then they stick to it, and the lapse stage is not very high in Chyawanprash kind of a product, and they get hooked on to it once people get used to the taste of it. So lapse stage is not an issue. It's roping in more consumers, spreading more awareness and increasing penetration, which is what we guys are working on. And we've gained 520 basis points because we are the big players. As more players enter into the Chyawanprash market, we strengthen our position in Chyawanprash, and we are the beneficiaries of that share of voice going up in the Chyawanprash market. So that is how we are getting benefited, and 520 basis point comes on back of increased awareness of Chyawanprash driven by the government of India, more players coming in, better SOV, and also we doing better execution in marketplace. Pre-season loading and all that is really helping us in Chyawanprash. As far as honey is concerned, while there are other players who entered the honey market, it's a great thing that more competitors are coming in. They are actually increasing the size and the penetration levels of honey market also, and we are again the beneficiaries of that SOV going up. Unlike last time, wherein we were not very competitive and not very aggressive, we lost market share to Patanjali. This year on, we are being competitive and we are actually gaining our market shares. And we've gained our market shares in e-commerce, modern trade, GT, across the board, everywhere.
Sure, that's so very useful.
We are also extending honey into multiple other formats that I spoke to. We've launched honey pasties. We've extended honey into throat relief variant. We launched Tulsi honey and Ashwagandha honey last year. And all of them are doing well, and we are trending on path of introducing more value-added honeys in the market. And our initiative of taking honey from a therapeutic chest to foods continues.
So thanks, that's very helpful. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mish. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Abhi Mehta from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi team. Congratulations on this performance. I just had two questions. First, essentially, a lot of your peers have called out signs of a weakness in rural demand. Even you seem to have indicated some softness and sentiment towards in the run-up of festive. Could you share your thoughts and your opinion on this? And also, are there any factors which make it possible that we will not have a material impact even if we see a rural slowdown? Thank you.
Right. So, Abhi, it's very contradictory. So, we are getting different feedback coming in from, as far as the syndicated data is concerned, we find that urban is trending better as compared to rural. But if you look at the CAGRs, which is very optically the case being so, but if you look at CAGRs pre-COVID, COVID, post-COVID, rural has been very, very resilient. And rural has been growing, and if you actually plot the index, the rural index will be at the rate of around 104, 105 to the pre-COVID, during COVID level. That rural has been resilient through COVID all through. As far as urban is concerned, urban growths are still not in line with what the pre-COVID growths were. So it is still on a recovery path. So urban growth that you are actually seeing, you are seeing on back of modern trade recovering, e-commerce doing well, and lockdown easing out, and mobility actually improving. That's why urban is going. But long term, if you plot this going forward, rural will be resilient. If I look at our numbers now, in our numbers, we see rural is growing almost at around 12%. And this 12% growth is coming on back of 26% base of rural. So rural is trending to do well. Urban growth is in the range of around 9% coming on back of 18% base. So rural is trending well for us. And to leverage this tailwind, and you know, monsoon has been great. The harvest has been fantastic. MSPs have not been rolled out. Mandriga and railment is good. Unemployment rates in rural are kind of are the lowest at this time. And the festive season is coming in. We saw in the month of August and in the month of July and August, rural was doing very well. Only in the month of September, we have seen some slowdown. I should not say slowdown, some liquidity pressure in the rural. That also the barometer of that has been the wholesale demand in the hinterland has been a little lower as compared to what we saw in the month of July and August. But I think with festive season approaching and people back on the buying spree and mobility picking up, I think it's a matter of time. Rural will, in my view, keep trending well going forward also as compared to urban, at least for us. And we are also putting up our infrastructure improvements in place. We've already appointed around 7,000 yodhas, which is seeding operation for our villages. Our village coverage was targeted to be at around 80,000, and which we have already done. We are at around 83,500 already done. And next year, we should look at around 90,000 villages to be covered directly. We appointed more sub-stockists and yodhas also. So rural is resilient, and I don't think there should be so much of a problem while urban keeps recovering.
Okay, sir. Perfect. So, I mean, you would not be so concerned about this, you know, this sign is what I kind of read. That is correct, right?
No, we are concerned a bit, but I think the festive season should do the trick. And MSPs are not being rolled out, and government will take initiatives to see that rural demand remains salient. So, we are hopeful on the macroeconomics, yes.
Okay, sir. Okay. And just the second question is essentially on the margin side. Now, you know, you called out the input cost pressures. Now, we've done this quarter performance suggests that you've used the levers of cost savings and price hikes very well to, you know, offset this impact. Would you say that we're still kind of confident of maintaining our expectations of flattish to marginal expansion in FY22? Or would you like to revisit those numbers given the inflation? That's all from my side. Thank you.
Yeah. So, the inflation has been tough on us. We thought that there will be a little softening of inflation which will happen in quarter three. But the projection that we are getting for quarter three is also inflation only picking up from here. And we are not seeing any signs of softening happening in inflation. That said, to offset that impact of inflation and continue sustained inflation, we've taken price increases. In our segments of food, we've been able to mitigate all the impact of inflation through price increases, cost saving, etc. In our healthcare business, we've taken more price increases to more than cover up the inflationary impact in healthcare. In HPC business, which is 50% of our business, in 80% of our subcategories of HPC also, we've been able to cover up the impact of inflation, barring hair oils and hair care, where we are letting up ourselves only, and we are not taking very aggressive price increases because we think demand is also recovering from COVID mobility ease out happening in the market. And as you see, and the syndicated data also tells us, the hair oil market itself is around -2%. So, in a market which is showing a volume growth of around -2%, we don't want to take a price increase in a hurry, and we want to wait and watch, and we want to wait as much as we can, and that's where the maximum impact of inflation is also. And we are deliberately not pushing, and we are being calibrated there, which is the hair oils portfolio, where we are dependent on price point, lower price point, and also the market is pretty competitive. Yeah. So that is what we are waiting and watching. But if push comes to shove and if inflation doesn't abate, even in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter, then we'll be forced to take another round of price increases across the board. One advantage with the company, Abhi, is that we have brands which are market leaders in the category, and they are the ones which set the pricing table, and we are able to dictate the prices there, be it our healthcare range, our juices range, our home care product range, even juices where we are market leaders, and in other segments of oral care where we are market leaders in the Ayurvedic sub-segment. So we are able to take those price increases. We ourselves voluntarily are not really pushing the envelope on the price increases so that it doesn't have an impact on the demand for us. Volume share gain is most critical. But that said, we want to maintain operating margins for the full year.
Okay, so we'll maintain that. Thanks a lot. So this is extremely helpful, and happy Diwali, and wish you season greeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Abhi. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Shirish Pardeshi from Centrum. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, Mohit and team. Thanks for the opportunity. Hearty congratulations. There are two questions which I see here. Is that the NPD, what you mentioned, is about 10%. Is that correct number for the quarter?
No, it's only in the food and beverage segment. It's around 9.5% to 10%. That's the food and beverage segment, Shirish. Overall, NPD ratio is around 4.6% for us.
Okay. My question related on this is that there is a lot of noise, and most of the companies are talking about D2C brand. Are we making some efforts to exclusively have this, or we will use the traditional product extension strategy and getting into more aggressive into the adjacencies?
Now, on the D2C, we are making efforts, and by end of, I think, December, hopefully we should have a platform which is a direct D2C connect. That D2C connect is besides the regular conventional e-commerce connect on D2C that we already have. And in terms of NPD, we are launching exclusive e-commerce brands. Our innovation rate in e-commerce portal, which is around 7% of the overall business, is in the range of around 10 to 12% also, besides the food and beverage business. So e-commerce NPD are racing much ahead because it is a cradle for us to seed a lot of innovations. So those are exclusive e-commerce brands for us. Like you've seen the apple cider vinegar, you've seen the virgin coconut oil coming in, sesame oil coming in. All these are our baby care range happening. Now we launch diapers. These are all e-commerce exclusive initiatives that we have rolled out. So for that, that's a cradle of innovation for us. And we'll be keep seeding brands which are D2C connect exclusively on shared portals, which are like Amazon, etc., and try to create our own portal also for D2C connect with the consumer, with the objective of creating a first party data, and which will help us in our conventional route to market in terms of reaching out to the target consumers. So that's the plan on D2C.
Okay. My second question is, and thanks to Mr. Adarsh Sharma, we have seen, I mean, you have guided about 65,000 village coverage, and you are much ahead of time, and you are covering 84,000. So could you spend a minute or two explaining that, what is it that it means to the revenue growth? Is that momentum, the coverage, and you mentioned about 7,000 yodas. So what is it that in the second half we can expect? Is the throughput is going to improve, and you're also indicating that you will try to get it to 90,000 villages.
Right, so we continuously want to grow and keep investing behind our rural infrastructure, where Dabur is actually the front runner in terms of creating that entire infrastructure. So we have got the seeding operation right, Yodhas, and it is yielding great results for us. In the beginning, we appointed Yodhas in only the Hindi belt, which is UP, MP, Bihar. There are three states that we had identified, and we had appointed Yodhas there. Now we are extending these three states to six states, wherein we include Maharashtra, we are including Gujarat, and we are taking West Bengal also into account, and we are doing the seeding operation. So as the business scales up, what happens is a seeding operation, we appoint a rural, a village level entrepreneur, we create a stocking point there, and as the business scales up, then we convert them into a sub-stockist, and the business is on the rolls there, then it becomes an integrated part of our super and sub-network. That's the way we are growing, and this has given us very rich dividends, and we've been able to beat any sort of depression or compression in demand which may happen in the rural. We are not witnessing that. So on back of that, I think we guys are doing very well, and we are also simultaneously creating a lot of low unit price points and accessible price points which these villages can absorb, which is 10 rupee. In the presentation we've also shared with you, in Chyawanprash we created a 55 rupee price point. Chyawanprash was a 200 rupee which could not be afforded by rural, and rural is 47% of our business. So we've introduced a smaller price point so that that can rise the rural infrastructure and the consumers can benefit from these products at the right affordable price points. I don't know if I got your question right. I hope I answered.
Yeah. Yeah. So one follow-up, if you can spell out this volume growth, what you have reported, is the fact that your coverage in rural has gone up. And I would tend to believe that our direct coverage also would have gone up. So could you spell out what is our direct coverage? And the second part in that is that, does that mean that our dependence on wholesale has come down because our throughput and direct coverage will improve our efficiency?
Yeah, definitely it is coming down as we speak. Wholesale reliance is coming down. But that said, wholesale still remains a very important and essential part of our business. Wholesale contribution to the business is in the range of around 30% odd, and it used to be around 33%, so still it's around 30%. So it is a channel that we can't ignore at all, and we are very conscious on rate stability on cash and carry because it disrupts this channel, and we've seen some lot of disturbances coming on account of these cash and carry channels also. So our direct reach has gone up. It used to be 1.2 million. We have increased it to, as we speak, it's around 1.3, and going forward next year, we are targeting a 1.4 million reach, total direct reach. So this should, the ultimate objective is to reduce the reliance on wholesale and go direct, because when you go direct, you sell a higher assortment and more number of SKUs as compared to wholesale, which will only sell the KVIs for you.
Thank you, and all the best to you and Mohit and team, and all the best for Diwali.
Thank you, Shirish. Happy Diwali to you too.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Aditya Gupta from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. A couple of questions. First, on the hair oil business, I mean, there's definitely been a step up in the quarterly revenue run rate, and you alluded upon all the segments doing well. So, and then the margin pressure also. So between volume growth, market share, margin pressure, how are you looking at this segment going forward? How competitive are you willing to be to drive volume growth over here?
Right. So hair oil is a market on account of it being discretionary. I don't think it's fully recovered from the COVID. If you look at the syndicated data, we see the hair oil market -2 as we speak. Whereas we guys are not really fettered by market not growing, because our task is to take share from the competitor, and all the sub-segments we're doing well. As compared to market declining by -2, we guys are growing at +28% in hair oils, and all the sub-segments of hair oils are growing for us. So first of all, in coconut oil, we've grown coconut oil market. Anmol brand has grown by around 23%. And done very well for us, and it's continuously growing. It's already become 166 to 200 crore brand for us, and we'll be premiumizing the brand also going forward. So coconut is doing well. The second sub-segment is perfume hair oils. In perfume hair oils, both our flanker brands and the hero brand Dabur Amla are also doing well. The Sarso Amla, Brahmi Amla, Badam Amla flanker brands are doing well. And the third market is almond, and almond oil with opening up a modern trade, and almond oil being most salient in the modern trade, is also registering very good double-digit growth. That said, our market shares have gone up in all these three segments. We've gained 80 basis points market share in overall hair oils, including all the sub-segments here. So we are very positive because the headroom is huge in hair oils for us. So we are only around 1,000 odd crores, and the market size is around 10,000 crores. And there is always a scope of two players. Our Anmol is already a number two brand to the market leader now. We've replicated the number two brand already existing, Shalimar, and now we are the number two here. So we are very positive about the hair oil market, and we'll continuously keep striving. That said, there is a lot of inflationary pressure in hair oils on account of hydrocarbon-linked raw material going up and also packaging material going up, which is PET and PET linked. So there is a pressure, but we are trying to absorb that pressure. We are not passing that pressure of margins to the consumers as we speak, because market share gain is more important. And hair oil is a business, only 10% of the overall business of the company. And it is not something that we are completely dependent on. And we can try to relent as much as possible. That's what we are trying to do.
Got it. Very clear. Second bit on the HI business, you alluded to that you played in all the segments. How widespread is the launch already? Is it national, or what percentage of your total, let's say, umbrella of outlets it is already reaching, and what's the timelines to distribution here?
We've just started. We've just announced entry. We are now available in e-commerce and in modern trade to start with, and then gradually, slowly, we'll be rolling it out in the other channels. We will be not be launching in GT to start with. So it will be first e-com and then modern trade, and then eventually will be rolled out to other channels also. So it's a very, you know, early beginnings as yet. And while Odomos is doing very well for us, but in other categories, we have just seeded the entry.
Got it. And the last bit, again, a little bit on margins. I think you talked in some of the previous quarters that the A&P spend is, or your aspiration is to take it higher, north of 9.5%. But if I look at what's happened in standalone or console, it's in the range of 6.5%, 7.5%. So how should we be thinking about this line item, especially in the current inflationary scenario?
So this year we look at A&P expenses, and for us A&P expenses is just not advertising, which is ATL, but also BTL. It depends upon the demand situation in the marketplace, competitive intensity, SKUs, channel mix, product mix, it all depends. And most important is competitive scenario. So if we find that competition is very aggressive on the trade end, then we channel those resources on trade and gain market share. If we find that if consumer is getting more value and there are more discounters, then we pass, then we channel the resources to giving more value to consumer by way of giving him consumer promotion schemes. If we find that market is under-penetrated, then we invest the money in increasing the market penetration and therefore advertising. So if you look at the overall A&P spend of the company, A&P spend has been in the range of around 12.5%, which is in line with our top line growth. So that is good enough. That's not got diluted. What you see, what is visible to you, is only the ATL and the TV spends. TV spends have been optimized, and that has been done because last year there was also a lot of COVID contextual advertising, which has not come in this year. So there is a efficient and optimized spending on ATL, which has actually happened. And that said, we will be backing up our power brands and our innovations with sufficient investments so that our market shares don't go down. And that's what we are committed to doing. And overall, for the whole year, we'll be investing around 7 to 8% on ATL, etc., whereas BTL is even higher.
And also, just to add on, and on a media basis, the CAGR has been 18%. So last year we were 6.5% sales in this quarter, and this year it is 7.2%. So on a consistent basis, 2 year basis, we have increased it by 70 bps. Also the media.
Got it. Very clear. Thanks for the answers, Mohit and team, and Shubh Deepavali to everybody over at DAO. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vishwa. Very happy Diwali. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go.
Hi, team. Congrats on a good set of numbers.
On hair oils, just one data point, if you can give me. Your two-year CAGR for the revenues is 9.5%. What would be the two-year volume CAGR in the hair oils business?
7%.
So I think it should be in the same range, Percy, around 7%-8%. We've not taken much price increases in the hair oil business. Because of the competitive intensity, our focus has been to gain market shares, and not much price increase we have taken here.
Can you give some data on the broad basing of your hair oils business? So versus, let's say, 5 years ago or something, your main unit, which is your Dabur Amla hair oil, what salience would that be 5 years ago, what it is today? So that we can get a sense of how you have broad-based your business with different sort of sub-variants.
So I think overall, if I compare a couple of years back, Dabur Amla as a brand, since we started this flanker brand strategy, since then to now, flanker brands now contribute to more than 10% of the, or 10%, I think 15% of the overall sales of Dabur Amla. So gradually, slowly, that pie of the business is also growing, and we are taking share from the cheaper players in the marketplace with half the price with these flanker brands.
Right.
So I think around 15% of the saliency of hair oils should be the flanker brands that we introduce, and therefore, we say that flanker brands creating a moat around our main hero brand, which is Dabur Amla, is working well for us. I know that's the question, Percy, that you asked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
just one-
The salience of coconut oil, and that is also... Anmol brand was very small. Now it is fairly significant, and we are aggressively growing that.
Understood. Understood. You also mentioned that your innovation rate is 4.6%. How do you define this?
Innovation is defined by NPDs that we roll out in the current year and last year. So that's how.
The revenue coming.
For FY 2021 and FY 2022.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay, okay. And, so basically, if I glance, let's say, 2 years into the future, would you think at that point of time also, your innovation rate will maintain more or less at this kind of a level?
Yeah, I think that's the least we can do. I think if not more, it will be in the range of around 4%-5% consistently.
Okay, and I know this is sort of sensitive information, and I'm not looking for any exact sort of answer. But broadly, in which areas would you focus your innovation going ahead? Till now, I believe your innovation has been, at least in terms of number of launches, been more focused on health, immunity, hygiene, et cetera. In value-wise, yes, one fruit juices will be a big contributor, just that one innovation. But going ahead, in terms of number of innovations, would the focus shift from health, immunity, hygiene, et cetera, to something else?
No, Percy, that's not been our track record. We've actually been doing innovations across our eight power brands. The logic is that we have eight power brands, we have to scale them up, we have to make them bigger, and innovations are coming under every power brand. So what you've seen is under Chyawanprash and honey, we've introduced capsules, powders, and honey has gone into pasties and throat relief and all that. That said, even in Odomos, for example, home care, which is a home care brand for us, that is also getting extended. Réal has got extended into drinks and the 10 rupees. So innovations, both at the rural end, which is at LUP end, and at the premium end, at the e-commerce end. And that's how we are trying to capture innovations at every power brand. In addition to that, we have a RISE mechanism, which is regional insights, which we capture, and then we seed innovations for every region for us.
Right.
So it will be across the board, answer the question, not selective.
Understood. One last clarification here. In the innovation rate, would you... I know it would not be adjusted as a number, but would you also, at the back of your mind, have some calculation as to the amount of cannibalization, because if it's some kind of a variant and not a completely new subcategory you are entering into, a variant will give you sales, but it will also cannibalize some existing unit. So the actual addition to the sales might not be 4.5%, although those products which are launched in the last couple of years might be 4.6%.
No, not really. The way we see is we see an incremental addition to the turnover of a product, and that's how we see innovation at. And if you say it will cannibalize, yes, it will cannibalize, but that's a conscious cannibalization. So it will be a weeding and feeding, and the more you feed, the more you grow. That's the way we look at it. So every brand has been given a task or a KPI of having a 5% incremental revenue coming in from innovation. And not only innovations per se, you know what I'm saying.
Right, right. Got you. So that's all from me. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you, Percy.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Arnav Mitra from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Mohit and team, and congratulations on a very good quarter. My first question was on, fruit juices or beverages, where you've grown very strongly, and after a long time, we are seeing a two-year growth in this category being strong. So I just wanted to understand your confidence level in terms of, is this really marking a turnaround for that business, or were there some specific factors in this quarter which could have helped this growth? So I'm kind of guessing that as the channels were reopening out of home, there could have been some restocking in this category. And things like that. And so just wanted to gauge your confidence in terms of, is this really a turning point, and would you kind of continue at reasonably good growth rates into the second half?
Yeah, Arnav, we are very confident. I think we've turned the bend on juices business. So to your point, there are both reasons. One, the market is easing out and therefore mobility is increasing. Out-of-home consumption and in-home consumption both have fired as far as juices is concerned. We've gained market share because what's happened is the market which is declining is now growing at 37%. So there is also a tailwind of the market. I would not say it's only our initiatives only. The market is growing by 37%. We've grown by 43%, and therefore our market shares have gained around 100 basis points. Our NPD has contributed to around 10% here, and most of the initiatives that we put in place have also fired. So on back of all this, I feel if COVID wave 3 doesn't come in, then I feel the juices is in a good place and should keep firing for next couple of years at least.
And just a follow-up on that, on the NPDs, the aerated product as well as the fruit drinks, how far are you in the distribution here in terms of where you would potentially want to be versus where your products currently are available?
Well, there's a huge headroom available. We are not even scratching the surface as far as distribution is concerned. So first, we are looking at the immediate frontier, which is our real distribution. So first drinks will cover that distribution, and as we cover that distribution, we will keep appointing distributors who are very, which is a different ecosystem altogether for E&D outlets, so that we have the next milestone in place for us. So that said, huge headroom. So we are not even covering 10% of what the drinks is today in terms of the universe.
Understood. And my second question, Mohit, and second and last question is that, this entry into of this launch of Dabur Vita, which I'm assuming is the MFD and the LV under Odomos, these are obviously very large categories. A lot of advertising spend happens in these categories. So while I do see the point of kind of making the frontier bigger, is it spreading too thin? Because would you have the ability to, do advertising in those categories where the incumbents do a lot of advertising? And also in the context that you have Homemade, which you want to scale up. So just wanted your thoughts on, that choice that you're making.
Yeah, so Arnav, we are not launching very many new brands, actually, if you see. Homemade is a brand that is already existing and already salient. So we are just scaling up that brand. This year it will be 100 crores. Next year we are looking at a 200 crore coming out of a Homemade brand. So that's one, which is an existing brand for us. And Vita is the extension of Dabur brand, and we are promising immunity plus growth to the consumer, and it's a right to win for us to increase the addressable market size. LVP we are launching, it is not an Odomos brand, it's very salient in the consumer's mind, so it is just an extension. So I don't see these as very new products. Yeah, there is a requirement of advertising, and that is the case, but we will be going in a calibrated manner in modern trade first and selective outlets, where the requirement of advertising will be limited as compared to mass advertising, and we are not spreading the product too thin across for it to require mainstream advertising. So we'll be going in a very slow and a calibrated approach, gradually, slowly, geography by geography, channel by channel, to see how it actually grows.
Okay, thanks so much, Mohit. That's so much. All the best.
Thank you, Arna. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. I had three questions. The first one was on the innovation side. So, you know, is there a measure that you're using on kind of judging success rates of these innovations? Maybe, you know, all that you've done over the last 2 years, it has been fairly significant. You know, how do you kind of judge success rate? Is there a metric? If you could share anything on that side with us.
Right. So, Harit, a couple of matrices. First of all, is that we launch a product with a set KPI, which is a turnover. If we achieve that turnover, then we have a list of outlets where we reach out and what is the repeat purchase rate coming in from the outlet. If the hurdle rate goes beyond 20%, then we attribute success to NPD. And if the hurdle rate is less than 20%, then we keep reworking and refining the mix till the time we correct it and we increase the hurdle rate. Once the hurdle rate goes up to 20%, then we grow this beyond a point. So that's the way we look at the metric, and then as we launch the product, then immediately we do a launch track to refine the mix going forward. So that's the way we work.
And compare, and in the last 2 years, I mean, you know, what would have been that success rate? Is it higher than what you did in the previous two, or anything you could share?
See, our NPD success rate has been very good, except the COVID contextual portfolio, where we got a pushback, especially the sanitized and the home and hygiene portfolio. There, we have seen the market only shrink, which is sanitizer market, and there we made a good turnover of around 100 odd crores. That's been reduced to around 7 crores. So that's been negative as far as our success rate is concerned. But rest of the places, wherever we've launched our products, be it healthcare or beverages or HPC, we've had a significant good rate of success.
Got it. The second question was on the rural side. So compared to 18 months back, you know, pre-COVID versus now, you know, has the overall share of rural in India business increased? Because, you know, rural has also grown faster, and you've also, you know, sharply increased your distribution on the village side. So has there been an increase there? And if yes, what? How much is that?
Yeah, so rural has been growing faster as compared to the urban for Dabur. I think only in the quarter one, when post-COVID there was a recovery of urban happening, urban business grew higher than us. For us, overall rural contribution is around 47 to 48%, depending on quarter to quarter. It ranges between 47 to around 49 for us. So it's been almost remained pretty much similar from 47 to around 49. As we speak in the current quarter, it's around 47 for us. But rural is growing at a much faster clip as compared to urban.
And pre-COVID, this might have been this little lower than 47, right? I'm assuming.
Right, around 45.
Got it. And last question was on the bandwidth side. You know, you're sharply increasing distribution on rural, as well as, you know, with a significant new product and new category introductions that you're doing. Over the last 5 quarters, you know, people costs, which is employee costs, have actually grown, you know, below sales growth. So I just wanted to understand, you know, to support both distribution and increasing your TAM on the product side, you know, do you envisage, you know, at least in the near or medium term, sharper increase on the, at least on the employee line item to kind of handle this? Or do you believe that, you know, you can still derive, you know, leverage from here?
No, we are consistently investing in the front end. Be it advertising, that investment is going on, and S&D investment is also continuing. As you would have seen our infrastructure, we are appointing more number of sub-stockists. We've appointed more number of Yodhas, and those are distributors for us. That is a seeding operation. That doesn't cause increase in terms of overall S&M cost. What caused for the increase in the cost is engagement program. We've embarked on chemist engagement programs, modern trade engagement programs, and e-commerce programs, which cost money, but that's adequate enough. Whereas the scale of volume of business kind of is coming, and we have a volume growth of about 10%, we are easily able to subsume the cost of infrastructure increase and get a positive operating leverage, because the volume growth and the value growth is higher, and that's happening. That said, we are continuously investing on infrastructure and people also. What we've done of late under some Riddhi projects is that we've increased the span of control. We've reduced people at the top, and we've increased our feet on street below. That said, investments in front end is a priority. We will get a leverage from indirect overhead and staff cost, and we keep investing in the front end, and that's a priority for us.
Got it, Mohit. Wish you all the best, Mohit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Richard Liu from JM Financial. Please go ahead. It seems we have lost the line for Richard. We'll move to the next question from the line of Alok Shah from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Mohit and team. Congratulations on a great set of results. My first question is on the rural distribution that you mentioned that it is being served through Yodha. I just want to check that who serves this Yodha channel currently? A follow-up to that would be, what would be the revenue contribution that you get from the incremental 20,000 villages that you added, if you have that number handy?
Alok, sorry, I couldn't get. There was a little garble in the line. Can you please repeat your question?
Yeah. My question is, you said that the rural distribution strategy that you adopted is being done through Yodha currently, and, you know, they are more like village-level entrepreneurs. The question is, does Dabur directly service this Yodha or are they being serviced through some intermediary?
No, we directly service Yodha. Through a super stockist, we serve the Yodha, and super stockist takes this operation wherein he appoints the Yodhas in hitherto unserved villages, and that's how it becomes a stocking point. So we have rural sales promoters who actually go and appoint these Yodhas and create a stocking point over there. It's a cash and carry operation that you guys have got, and we don't extend too much of credit also to the Yodhas. As the business streamlines and the person is converted into a sub-stockist.
Got it. Basically, that is a channel where you do not intend to have a channel conflict, going ahead, because there's a lot of new channels which are coming, who are trying to tap this untapped rural. Is that understanding correct?
Not really. Not really. These are completely hinterland villages that we are talking about, which are not served actually. Here is not what we see too much of conflict. We are actually working with other players also. In Maharashtra, there are a couple of other players that we are working with them also with the seeding operation. There's a joint work which is happening with them. Yeah.
Got it. My second question is on D2C. Now, you know, Mohit, ever since you have come as CEO, you know, Dabur has been very adept to anything, you know, which are changing, be it at the time of COVID, you know, the technical launches, et cetera. But in D2C platform, you know, somehow you've taken time. Now, according to my understanding, you know, maybe your products are absolutely ideal for D2C with high gross margin, ability to increase your LTVs, lower CACs, et cetera. But somehow, you know, we are still targeting about, you know, few more months after which we'll plan and then we'll invest behind it. Can you share your views as to, you know, why is it that, you know, on D2C platform you've taken some more time possibly?
Look, you are absolutely right. I think you observed it correctly. So when I came to the India business, there was a platform which was created called Ask Dabur, which is a D2C platform that we guys had created. It was a direct platform wherein we were soliciting orders from the consumers and we were serving the consumers our products. And it was a complete bleed. We had almost around 10 to 11 crores is that we lost in that operation, because it was an operation where the consumer used to put up the order, used to service that order, and when we used to take the order to the house, he used to cancel the order because it was more cash. So we were bitten by D2C and we had huge losses that we had taken. So we want to be very careful when we do D2C. This time, the D2C operation that we'll embark on is not going to be a revenue model operation for us. It is more going to be a brand building and getting the first party data for us. It's a marketing tool rather than being a commercial tool for us. So that is why we are taking time. So we are working with a couple of vendors who are helping us building this D2C model for us, which could have an exclusive brand. It could be available to our existing brand portfolio also. So we are taking some time, but I think we want to get it right this time on.
Got it, got it. And Mohit, my last question is on your cash and liquid surplus. Now, broadly, you know, you have close to about, I think, 5,000-6,000 crore cash plus liquid investment sitting in your books. Now, what are the alternate uses for this? Are you looking at some acquisition very seriously? Because while in the past also, you know, you mentioned, but domestic acquisitions have really not come by. So, you know, what can we think of this cash surplus that you have on your books? That's all from my side.
Ankur, you want to take this question?
Thanks, Amit. Right observation. We are sitting on almost 5,600 crores cash at a consolidated level and almost 4,500 crores at an India level. Yeah, we keep on evaluating, right opportunities, which are something which are very strategic from either the product portfolio mix or from a geographic footprint. But they have to come at the right value and at the right time for us to invest. And yes, we are open to opportunities, as we said, for the right, strategic fit. And we would be keen on investing going forward. So we are evaluating.
So any hurdle, timeline where you will think that, if we don't have, then, possibly it is, we will increase our dividend payout or look at some alternate ways of cash repatriation? Any thoughts?
In terms of, we are evaluating, but it depends on the timing, it depends on the right opportunity. When will it come, how is it? We keep on doing the due diligence also. But both the parties have to agree at the right terms for the, party to, for the deal to be executed.
And also, if you remember, in the month of May 21, we have increased the dividend payout to the shareholders.
We have increased our dividend payout as we speak, so that's what we have done. But acquisitions are a chance event and you can't really plan the acquisitions. We can plan diligence and we can do market working, and that's what we keep doing all the time and evaluating targets to Ankush's point. But we can't have a fixed timeline. It is a big chance event.
Absolutely, absolutely. We understand, sir. Thank you very much and happy Diwali to everyone at the Dabur team. Thank you.
Thank you, Alok. Wish you and family a very happy Diwali too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. The next question is on the line of Harsh Sheth from HDFC. Please go ahead.
So, Mohit sir, we have consistently spoken about the massive opportunity in health supplements category, given the gross under-penetration of products. But the growth, as one might anticipate, has moderated. So, a couple of questions here. So, are we looking for new category launches, say, outside of honey or Chyawanprash, say, in broader nutraceutical space? And secondly, sir, with COVID most likely behind us, do you feel there is a need to revamp the communication? Now, as most of the products across multiple categories, have been marketed as protectors against COVID, and, there might be a need to change the consumer perception. And so, lastly, we have mentioned about the stickiness in Chyawanprash. So just wanted to know who would be the larger audience here. Is it the senior folks or is it the youngsters? Just wanted to check if you are doing any white space mapping here.
The voice wasn't really clear, but I think what I've understood is you're saying that are we planning to get into other categories besides Chyawanprash and honey? I think the answer is yes. We've already gone into the nutraceutical markets by entering the pure herbs. We've already launched a range of pure herbs in the marketplace, and gradually, slowly, we are scaling it up. And the range of pure herbs that we've rolled out is ashwagandha, the giloy, and multiple other pure herbs. Pure herbs in both capsule form and also in form of powders is what we've rolled out, and we are gradually, slowly scaling it up. Now, answer is, are we planning to exploit new white spaces? Yes. We have plans to get into MFT space, which is white space as far as we are concerned, and we feel we have a right to win. And therefore, Dabur Vita is being rolled out in that space. And that's a huge market, it's a big entry. So that's what we are planning. Was there a second part of your question also? Yeah, the target audience for Chyawanprash is more adults and who have low immunity, and they are the ones who actually use it. And it's made for the family, for kids and for adults and for the whole family. And after COVID, the product has become actually a family product and not only for adults. But the perception, to your point, is more adult today. It makes an entry from the adults and then it's being used by the family, the mother and the child and everyone. And to improve the organoleptics and the sensorials of the product, we are working on it. And that's why Chyawanprash available in a tablet form, and also going forward, a powder form will help us broad base the target audience of Chyawanprash from adult to the kid and to the mother. And the Dabur Vita initiative will also help us in the same.
Understood. That was very clear. And so secondly, we have a big ambition in food business. I think that we are aiming for 500 odd crores in the next 3 to 4 years. So wanted to understand what specific categories are we looking here, say beyond condiments and the opportunity size, and what does current sort of pipeline look like in this space?
So we've got a homemade brand, and in homemade we are scaling it up. As you know, that we've already rolled out chutneys and pickles. And, for confidentiality reasons, I'll not be able to tell you as to which all categories we'll be getting in. The market is becoming very competitive. I'm sure you'll appreciate that. But we are proposing to scale up the homemade brand drastically and increase the brand franchise. As and when we keep launching the brand, you'll come to know. But the attempt with pickles and chutneys is to brand the unbranded huge market which is already there in India. And we've got a very positive response with pickles and chutneys.
Understood. And so can we presume that the growth here can be largely through inorganic this thing, or will it be organic growth only in the food business specifically?
No, it could be a combination of both organic and inorganic. We are scouting out for targets for inorganic, but that's again per chance. And but we are still working on an organic entry as well.
Understood. So that was helpful. Thanks, and wish you a happy Diwali.
Yeah, happy Diwali to you too. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chay Doshi from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I've got two or three questions. First one is, over the past 2 to 3 years, new product launches have started contributing 5% to sales, as against maybe 1.5% earlier. So during this period, how has your allocation of advertising budgets been between, the mature brands and the new products that you have been launching? If you could throw some color. And essentially the idea of asking question is because both in digital first brands, D2C brands, as well as some of the new categories that you're launching, the requirement for A&P support would be significant. So just want to understand how are you balancing the aspirations of different brand managers?
Jay, for us, it is really not launching new brands. We are getting into adjacent categories through power brands. We've got a power brand architecture of 8 power brands, and most of our resources are deployed behind power brands. Like in Real, Real is a power brand for us. If we get into drinks, which is an adjacent category of drinks in addition to nectar, and therefore requirement of advertising is not as much. It is more requirement of distribution and more requirement of bandwidth, which is what we provide. And that's how we guys manage our resources. So Real is a 1,000 crore brand. If we get into a drinks market, we broad base the addressable market from 1,600 to around 6,000-7,000 crores. And therefore, requirement of those advertising resources is not much. If I'm scaling up a homemade brand, I was in an onion paste, a garlic paste, a ginger paste. Now I'm getting into chutneys. Yeah, there's a different edit required, but within the similar ad pro, as I keep growing the brand, I have my advertising investments also growing. That's the way. If I'm in home care, I've got Odomos brand. If I launch a racket, electric racket, I don't have to advertise so much. It's only e-commerce portal advertising that one has to do. And likewise, brand after brand, we do the same thing. If in Amla, we launched Amla Almond, it's a flanker brand for us. So it is getting subsumed under the Amla franchise for us. So that's the way we guys plan, wherein it doesn't put too much a strain on our purse strings.
Understood. That's helpful. Second question is, what is the level of planning that would have gone behind the launches, in case of Dabur Vita, your foray into MFD category and liquid vaporizer? So what are typical product development life cycles and, when would you have started working in that direction from, time of conception to go to market?
See, we've got a gate process for all the NPDs. The gate process invariably used to take around 2 years prior to COVID. In COVID, we've been able to shrink the entire, window of NPD launches, which was 2 years. Now it is taking us, in COVID, it used to take us 3-4 months. But now post-COVID, it is again taking us almost a year. To tell you, we've been planning for almost a year and a half as far as Dabur Vita is concerned, and now it's seen the light of the day. So is the case with LVP. And so invariably around a year or so,
Understood. And finally, a quick bookkeeping question. You indicated that, July and August were quite good as far as rural demand and growth was concerned. There was a little bit of slowdown in September. And then you indicated that you were hopeful that, with festive season, demand will improve. So I'm not really sure whether you made any comment on October month, whether it was better than September and in line with what you witnessed in July and August. And this is with respect to rural demand.
No, we've seen a little, liquidity pressure from the rural and from the wholesale segment, which we have seen and which carried on in September and also into October. So hopefully November with the festive season, things should actually get better. But there is a pressure on the demand that we guys are seeing, and the Kantar syndicated data also alluded to what I'm saying. And also the Nielsen September data, which has just come out today, is also talking about almost a flat volume growth in the FMCG market as we speak.
Understood. That's very clear. Thank you so much and best wishes for Diwali.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question is on the line of Rakesh Roy from Insec. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, sir. Sir, can you highlight the demand outlook for international market for Reserve-wise?
International
market. So,
yeah,
international markets are doing well for us. And I think they are out of the COVID crisis. And all the markets are doing well for international. Overall, international business has grown by 13.8% constant currency terms. With the largest market, Middle East, North Africa, has grown in constant currency terms by 12.8%. And all the countries in the MENA markets have done well. Our Sub-Sahara, which is the Africa market, has grown by 25%. Our Nigeria business, which is a key market in Sub-Sahara, has grown by 21%. Our Namaste business, which is a North America business, and a bit of Sub-Sahara, has grown by 16%. Turkey business was a little impacted in the last quarter as we got out of COVID. The growth has been around 3.5% for us. There's been currency depreciation there also. The SARC business has also grown by around 17.6% for us. So overall, international business is in a good space and doing well for us. And we would anticipate double-digit growth coming in international business if the COVID third wave and any lockdowns don't happen in international markets.
Right, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Kundu from Antique. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question was on the tax part, bookkeeping questions. For the year, where do we see the effective tax rate? Because in this quarter, tax rate has gone up significantly. So for the full year, what should be the tax rate that we have to factor in on a consolidated basis?
Yeah, Abhijit, on a consolidated basis, you know, we are almost 23% both at a quarter level and YTD level. And we expect it will be in a similar range for the full year, around 23 to 23.5% for full year. Yeah.
Okay. And two more questions. So one question was on, Mohit, you said that, there has been some issues with liquidity, tightening of liquidity in the rural markets, and Nielsen has indicated a flat year-on-year volume growth. So in the light of this, how do we see the year ahead? I mean, December and March quarter. I mean, what are your expectations? Because the first half has been really strong, despite a very strong base. Now, what are the expectations? Would it be possible still grow in double digits on the top line front?
Abhijit, we've indicated that we've taken a target of double-digit growth for the full year, double-digit volume growth for the full year, and we will maintain a target to do double-digit growth. There is a base hump which is there in the current quarter, and that we have to circumvent. That is there, but one of the quarters could be having a single digit, another could have a double digit growth. But overall, for the full year, we'll maintain a double digit growth rate in the India and also in the international business. So I think that is what we will do, not because of the macroeconomic, but because of our own efforts and good execution. Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, in oral care, as per our channel checks, there has been some amount of pressure in terms of growth because the competitive activity has gone up. So last year, one of the largest player was finding it difficult to reach out to the markets. There was some issue with distribution, all of that. And so this year, there has been heightened competition. For Dabur, what we have seen is Dabur was growing at a very strong rate in oral care led by Dabur Red toothpaste. So is there any increase in competition or slight moderation in growth or on a high base growth has moderated a bit in oral care? So what's the scenario there?
No, Vijay, the oral care, we are in a good space. I think we've got a very differentiated proposition and we are completely unfazed by the competition till now. Our Dabur Red, which is a flagship brand, has grown by 20% in the last quarter also, while we see a 15% growth overall for oral care, but that is coming because of a very high base of Lal Dant Manjan last year, which grew by around 40%, and that is almost flat in current quarter, but our Red toothpaste has got a CAGR also of 20%, and this quarter we've gained 40 basis points in terms of market share also, and we are steadily increasing. Now, if you look at the market size, the market segment of herbal, which is around 30%, has actually grown at 1.3x of the non-herbal, where the market leader, which you are saying is not aggressive, that is growing at around 8.5%, which is non-herbal, and the herbal market is growing at around 11 to 12%. So there is a huge delta between a non-herbal and the herbal market, and Dabur is growing at 1.3x of the herbal market also. So therefore, from a market share standpoint, we are consistently gaining market share, and it's a matter of time. I think another 2 quarters, we are 50 basis points behind being a number 2 brand in the country, number 2 company in the country in oral care. So I am extremely confident on oral care despite competition going up, but the competition is good for us because we'll be able to manage competition reasonably well here, and I don't think there's so much of pressure. Plus, we've got a right to win, and we are the number one in herbal, and there's nobody else in herbal. And even if the competitor does herbal offerings, they only add to our tailwind. So we become the beneficiaries of that. Our all the new product initiatives of Dabur Herbal Clove and Alpha ingredients that we've launched are doing well. So overall, I think we are in a good space as far as the oral care is concerned.
Okay, got it. So congrats on a very good performance. And happy Diwali.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now close the question queue and take the last question from the line of Richard Liu from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Mohit, I have two questions. One is, I've noticed some announcements in recent times with regards to private placements of NCDs. Just wanted to check what is this regarding, especially since you've got a cash balance of 5,000 odd crores.
Yeah, I'll let Mr. Ashokian take that question.
This has been placed primarily to fund the CapEx. As you know, we have recently put on a new plant in Indore, which will be costing over 500 crore rupees. In addition to the modernization expansion, we keep on going on our existing plants in other places like Badri, Jammu, or Pantanagar, or Tejpur. And primarily our investment which we have, that we have invested for a higher return for a slightly longer period, so it was not making any sense to withdraw those monies. And moreover, we have been able to raise this money at a very fine rate. That is why we have resorted to this placement of NCDs.
Okay, understood. Thank you for that. And Mohit, the next question to you is really that, if you can walk us through the numerous NPDs that you've been doing since the last, year and a half, as in, how have these done in quarters subsequent to the quarter of launch? And if you can just take an example of maybe the best performing NPD and the worst performing NPD, how large they have become since launch and how big these can become over time.
Right. So Richard, NPD is going to be the center stage of our strategy, and that's one of the ways how we are trying to grow, and which will be the case going forward also. If I take one of the best NPDs will be drinks, then we extended Real Tetra Pak into drinks, and we entered the mango drink market to 7,000 crore, and that's doing well. It's the second year of the launch, not even the second year, I think it's the first year going forward. We launched it sometime last year, and this year we clock 100 crores in the drink space. As far as that's the best, the worst will be in terms of sanitizer. During COVID, we launched the sanitizer. We did 100 crore of sales in sanitizers in some 6 months' time, and this year we'll do a sale of not even 7 crores. So that's the worst NPD for me. The ones which are medium will be COVID contextual NPDs like Tulsi drops, Haldi drops, health juices. During the COVID period, they done very well. And now, post second wave of COVID, now the growth is actually much lower. But I will not say that this launch is not doing well. It's a huge market and will continuously grow. The CAGRs are still in double digits, more than double digits, and going forward it will sustain as we keep scaling up these NPDs. And we've done Apple, like one of the better launches that we've done in e-commerce is Apple Cider Vinegar. Apple Cider Vinegar is also doing exceedingly well, around 1.5 to 2 crore of business is which we are clocking every month in that. So even the baby range that we rolled out in e-commerce is doing a business of around 1.5 crore on a monthly basis. So overall, I think I should say 80% of our NPDs have done very well. 20% they have not done so well, but so we are okay with it. So it is not giving us sleepless nights, it's not done well. So I think we'll manage it, and we are incorporating a culture, a fearless culture of doing NPDs in the company, and even if some of them fail, it's all right.
Understood. Gaurav, that's very useful. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Gagan Ahluwalia for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Shravan. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen, in this conference call. The webcast, audio recording, and transcripts will be available on our website very soon. Thank you, and stay safe and healthy. Good evening.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Dabur India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.